Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Well, welcome back to the show, the DL Link Show on 101.9 Hi FM. And really delighted that Dr. Michelle King is joining us. But please feel free to keep on sending your messages. As I say, just really a check-in to see how you're doing. And if you have any suggestions for the show or if you have any stories that you'd like to share, please SMS us on 34519, 34519. So our next guest, as I say, Dr. Michelle King, part of an interdisciplinary pain clinic and palliative care team in Limpopo. And we're really delighted. She wrote an incredible article in the Buddies for Life, Maintaining Hope When Faced with a Cancer Diagnosis. Dr. King, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Energy. Thank you so much for having me on your show today.
It's great to have you on the show. You said you're having a problem with signal. Don't worry, we will work through it. But for now, you're here and we can hear you loud and clear. And before we start talking about your article and looking at really the decisions that you make when you have a diagnosis, I'd like to first talk about this team that you're a part of in Limpopo, this interdisciplinary pain clinic, this palliative care. So Dr. King, perhaps you can just tell us a little bit more about what you do and just also to explain to our audience what palliative care is all about.
Thanks, Nikki. So everyone kind of, they asked me as a psychiatrist, how did I land up working in palliative care in the chronic pains field? So as a psychiatrist, a big part of what we do is listening and talking about emotions. And we're never scared to talk about the difficult stuff. Whereas if you haven't got the training in dealing with those difficult emotional conversations, you might be hesitant to have them. And unfortunately, as a doctor, that might mean that you don't have those conversations because you yourself are just too uncomfortable to have them.
Absolutely.
So I think as a psychiatrist, I can bring value to the team in that regard. But that being said, anyone who's trained in palliative care is trained in having those communication skills and not being afraid of having those difficult conversations about death and dying. So when you're working with a palliative care team, you're really getting that extra layer of support that you wouldn't be getting when you're working with someone who isn't trained specifically in palliative care.
Wow. And I think what you've said is so important is that even the doctors, if they themselves are difficult with the emotions, you know, how that translates with their patients being able to connect with and express the emotions. So let's go to that. So because when you're looking at palliative care, you're looking at, and it's, as you said, you're part of the pain clinic, you bringing that side to it, but I'd like to just focus on pain and what an important part your mental state plays in your experience of pain.
Oh, it's huge.
And maybe if you can just speak to that.
So the example I love to give, because it highlights how emotions and pain are connected, are a little toddlers. So I'm sure many of you either have kids or you have nieces or nephews or grandkids. So if we take that little toddler, right, and they're at a birthday party and they come to you and ask you for their third piece of chocolate cake and you say no, and that little one turns around and walks and just bumps her knee ever so gently on the corner of the chair, what we see happens is that little one bursts into tears and maybe rolls on the floor in pain, not because she's trying to manipulate you, but because that's the emotional experience of her pain at that moment, right? But then we can take that same little toddler at the birthday party, you know, souped up on chocolate, running around, having the best time ever, and she comes inside and you see this little toe spurting blood and you go, oh my gosh, what happened to your toe? And it's only at that moment when the child sees the blood spurting everywhere that they start crying, right? So the idea is when we're happy and we're feeling good, we actually don't have to be aware about the pain that we're experiencing. But when we're stressed and anxious, that experience of pain is just magnified.
Wow. Okay. That's amazing. And also, and I love that analogy. It's brilliant. But also around pain is the anticipation around the pain. So, and I'm sure you experience that all the time. So for people who are going for particular treatment that know that that treatment is uncomfortable or can be painful, it can very often be the expectation of it that causes so much more pain. If you can speak to that as well.
Oh, Nikki, you're so right. I mean, it's that, like I said, it's the expectation. And I think especially with the diagnosis of cancer, everyone expects it to be a really painful journey. So they've already got that as their benchmark. This is going to hurt. This is going to be difficult. I'm going to be in so much pain. You know, we expect to suffer. It's just the narrative that we've heard from everybody about having a diagnosis with cancer and living with it and then going through treatment. But anything that's going to make us feel fearful or anxious is going to push up our pain levels.
Yeah. So, what you said there about the, you know, people already telling you this is the painful journey. How many times have I had people coming onto the show and they talk about the C word? And that says so much because, you know, we don't even want to say it. It's like you talking about difficult to engage in your emotions, and it's difficult to engage in the word cancer because of, as you say, what it brings up and then the kind of experience that you can have. So let's speak to that, Dr. King. You talk about having control over the decisions you make in order to maintain hope when one has this kind of diagnosis. Let's start off right at the beginning when you have this diagnosis. There is this idea that it could be this awful journey. As you've said, this could impact your experience of the journey. But let's speak to the grief of it, because there is loss. Whatever happens, everyone talks about after the journey that they are not the same as they were before. And then there's the real loss where there could be a death, there could be a passing. Maybe we could just talk, if you could just explain and we can unpack this idea of a journey of grief.
Okay, so two things just to comment on. When we get the diagnosis of cancer, that's actually when we should start engaging with our palliative care team, because that's when we need this extra support. When you're at the end of your journey and you've got a day or two or a few hours, there's no time to go through this process, right? So that's why we say early on in your diagnosis, get a palliative care team behind you, because they're the ones that can help you walk this path, right? So when it comes to grief, like you said, it's not just about dying, but it's about the anticipation of loss. So we can be grieving for the person, our loved one who's diagnosed with cancer, who hasn't died yet, because we know that they're going to die from their illness, right? Or if you yourself have a diagnosis of cancer, you will grieve so many things, right? That the loss of your independence, maybe the loss of your income, the loss of your sense of self. You know, if you always see yourself as a radio presenter, right, and suddenly you can't do that anymore, you lose your sense of purpose, right? And that's going to create a grief reaction. And it's something that one can unpack and work through in a therapeutic environment, either with a therapist or a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a social worker.
Dr. King, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, there. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Dr. Kim, perhaps we can, just at this point, I think, you know, I did start off and I asked you about palliative care. And we spoke about emotions and how important it is, and you being a psychiatrist and having that background and that you are part of a team. Maybe you can just also just explain who else is part of that palliative care team, because this is really an important one. We've often spoken about hospice on this show, and there's this idea and there's this perception that hospice is something that is just there for end of life. And I love that you brought in that you, when you're first diagnosed, that you should be looking at working with a palliative team, a palliative care team, because of this kind of intervention when it, in terms of how you you respond to the diagnosis, how, what kind of mindset you are, how have, what kind, how you're feeling. So maybe you can just expand on when you're part of the team. Who else is part of this palliative care team?
So with a palliative care team, it's very individualized. So it's based on what you need and what your family needs. So maybe early on in your journey, you might just be seeing, I'm just trying to think who it would be, maybe the social worker together with your oncologist and your GP. Or if you're really not coping at all, then maybe you'd be working with a psychologist as well. If you're experiencing maybe a lot of nausea from your chemo, or you're really struggling to eat, then a dietitian would be on board. In terms of keeping you exercising and going, then your physiotherapist is there. If you try to find out, you know, how do I juggle work and taking care of my home, then an occupational therapist will come in just to help you plan your week and prioritize things. So it's very individual, and it will change as your illness progresses. So at the end, you may be having a nurse who specializes in wound care to help you. So like I said, it's so individual, and on your journey, your team will change.
Yeah.
But I always say to everyone, you must remember you're part of that team as well. You must be part of that decision-making process, and be your voice, use your voice. You're part of that team, and never be in a situation where you just get told what to do all the time. Like, okay, we're going for the next round of chemo, or you have to do this, you have to do that. No, you get to decide what you want at the end of the day. And like I said, you get to decide when enough's enough.
Fantastic. Dr. Kim, we're going to take a quick break. After the break, let's talk about this, you know, preserving a sense of hope, moving through it and being hopeful, and also having that certain sense of control when it comes to making your own decisions whilst on this journey. So we're going to play a song and we'll be back with you.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Thank you so much for staying with us. This is the Deal Link Show, where we connect you through insights, information, and illumination. I'm Nikki Seberini. This is 101.9 Chai FM. If this is the first time you've tuned in, well, it's lovely to have you. The Deal Link, if you don't know, is just an incredible organization that has been in existence since 2010. Wow, 14 years, originally founded by Michelle Goodman and Jackie Artsula. And the aim of the Deal Link, and so many of you listening now have firsthand experience with this magnificent organization. And it's all about providing a nurturing safe space where patients who are faced with cancer and their families can turn to for support. Support in so many areas, whether it's coming home after treatment to a beautiful hot meal that the Deal Link has dropped off, or a delicious baked challah on a Friday, or maybe you're struggling to get to the doctor and someone gives you a lift, or you're concerned about your children and who will look after them when you're having the treatment and there's someone to do that. And maybe even on the weekends, just going and having your hair done, your nails done. Maybe you are losing your hair and you're looking for a wig. You know, this is what the Deal Link does. And so this show is dedicated to bringing stories to you, to bringing latest treatments to you as well. And that's why I started off the show and I just opened up and I said, we'd love to hear from you. You are such a loyal audience always when we're looking at fundraisers, which is what the Deal Link does in order to remain in existence. You always come to the party, always so supportive. So yeah, we'd love to know if there's anything that you'd like us to focus on the show. Just let us know. You can SMS us on 34519. Or if you have stories that you would like to share, any interactions with the Deal Link, again, 34519. We really, really would love to hear from you. So our guest today is Dr. Michelle King, who's part of an interdisciplinary team at the pain clinic and palliative care team in Limpopo. And we were talking about emotions and this journey when diagnosed with cancer, how important it is to get this team together, this palliative team together, and having these sometimes uncomfortable conversations and the different levels of grief and what you could lose when you first have that diagnosis and this process and this journey and having people to support you along the way. So Dr. King, before the break, We spoke about hope. We spoke about how important it is to be in control as much as you can, make your decisions. You know, lots of doctors and people are going to be telling you what you need and what you don't need, but being an active participant in your healing journey. When you are this active participant, does that go a long way in shifting your mindset, your emotional state? Making one more hopeful on this journey?
Oh, definitely. I think if you're in a situation where you don't get to make decisions and everyone around you is making them for you, you feel helpless, you know, as if you've got no control over what's going on. So if you can make that shift where you become involved in the decisions or being the decision maker, you redefine the situation. You suddenly got control over it. And having that control over your life goes in a long way in terms of feeling better about yourself. And with that whole idea of maintaining hope, it's about having a plan. Because as soon as we don't have a sense of purpose and we don't know where we're going, that's going to create that feeling of helplessness. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. And what would a plan look like? So people who are listening and they're going, okay, that sounds good. I want to be in control or more control, or I want to have a plan. I want to be more hopeful. What could people be doing practically? What do you suggest? What does this plan look like?
So I always say, like in the article, have a plan A and a plan B. So plan A is things go perfect. There are no bumps along the road. Your chemo works. You're in remission. End of story. Plan B is what happens when plan A fails, right? Because so many people never talk about that. They just have the perfect scenario and they think, well, if I don't think about it, nothing bad will happen. But we can't do that. We need to say, okay, if the best possible outcome doesn't happen, how are we going to cope? What are we going to do? So that's what I was saying in the article, have a plan A and a plan B. But having a treatment plan means breaking it down. What am I going to need along the way? Because your treatment plan at the beginning of your journey is going to look very different to the one at your end of your journey, right? So even at the end, if you've only got a few days, there's so many things that you can still make decisions about. You can decide where you want to be. You know, if you want to be in hospice or at home, or you prefer to be in the hospital, you can decide how you want to be getting medication, what medication you want to be getting. You can choose what food you want to be eating, because if your family's just been putting you on a health diet for most of the time, you know, you can eat chocolate if you want to have chocolate, you know, so you get to make those decisions. Mm-hmm. And also to decide, who do you want there? What kind of music do you want to be playing while you're lying in bed? Are there certain smells that remind you of your childhood that you want to introduce into your room? So all these little things empower us, because it's you getting to say, I want this right now. This is what I need right now.
Wow, it's amazing. I'm thinking about the patient who is making those kind of decisions. And then I'm thinking about how difficult it is, as you said, to have these conversations. So we're going beyond the treatment decisions, we're going to the plan A and the plan B. I'm speaking to that plan B. And just how difficult it is to get there. And so, or not. And that's a question I want to ask you, because that's where you come in. You're working with a lot of people where you're starting to say to them, let's look at a plan B. And I just wonder how you approach it. And also for the patients, how they approach it, because the interaction between them and the ones they're leaving behind, those conversations, how difficult to navigate that. And what do you have to say, Dr. King, when you step in and you, within that situation, you're looking for hope?
It's a really difficult question, because it's so individual, and everyone's got different ways that they're going to cope and different ways that they're reacting to the situation. So it's very individual, because you'll have those people who want to know everything, right? Like, give me the nitty gritty, tell me what's going to go on, what's the worst case scenario. And then you get those people who are like, I don't want to know. Don't tell me, because if you tell me about it, it's going to happen. So I think it's the people who are in denial that are the most challenging to work with. And that's what I'm saying. If we've got time to have these discussions, we can slowly, slowly talk about, okay, where are you at the moment? What's going on? What are your concerns? What are you worried about? And kind of let your patient lead you as to where they need that extra support. It's not something that we can push. You know, you have to stay with your patient. Where are they on this journey? How much support do they need? What do they need?
As you say, yeah, each so different, yeah.
Yeah, I think the other thing that from my experience, that so often gets done wrong is working with children. Because you'll get parents who say, oh, no, we mustn't tell the kids. They mustn't know what's going on. Or when their mother passes away, you say, oh, mommy just went to sleep. You know, all those things are really bad because kids need to process their grief as well. And if you think you're hiding stuff from them, you're not. They pick up on it. You know, they see mom going to the doctor all the time. They see her losing her hair. And that's going to make them anxious and scared because they're clueless. If they say, oh, mommy's fine, nothing's wrong. And they can see, well, no, my mommy's not doing well. So you have to have those conversations with kids in a gentle way, and that's age appropriate. And I think that's also where the palliative care team comes in, that we can help guide those conversations.
It's so important. Yeah. Oh, wow, it's so important. And, you know, as you were saying that, Dr. King, we started off right at the beginning when you spoke about these difficult emotions and these difficult conversations, and that sometimes it's difficult for the doctor to have those conversations, and so it kind of starts there, and then it just moves all the way through. And as you said, as you diagnosed, you should be having these conversations, not necessarily because the outcome is going to be a bad outcome, but because it's important to have those conversations. We should all be having those conversations. What we are fearful of, how we feel about losing one another. I don't know. I mean, what do you think about what I'm saying?
Oh, I agree 100%. I think we should all have had that conversation with our loved ones. What do we want to do when we die? What kind of funeral do we want? What do we want? You know, do we want to be cremated? Do we want to be buried? Who do we want there? You know, it's part of our journey. And then so many people or their partners just don't want to have that conversation. Like, no, you're never going to die. Don't talk about it. Nothing bad will ever happen. But unfortunately, we're human beings, and that's how our journey ends. It ends with death. And I agree with you 100%. We should be having these messy, uncomfortable journeys. We can't avoid it.
Yeah. Can't avoid it. I think what you've brought up is really, really, really important. The conversation right at the beginning, not meaning it's going to, you know, that's the direction. Like, oh, we can't talk about it because it's a bad omen or it's bad. But having the conversation is really important. I suppose it could just ultimately change this journey so much in terms of the connection and how you're there for one another. Pretty extraordinary, but not easy to navigate, Dr. King. Not easy, which is why we have people like you around. And you get to do that and hold people's hands and help them. I thank you so much for coming onto the show and, you know, and having this, what could be a very difficult conversation, but something that I think people need to be aware of. So thank you so much for joining us and for that wonderful article. We really do appreciate it in Buddies for Life. Thanks, Dr. King.
You're more than welcome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Dr. King, Dr. Michelle King here on Chai FM. Yeah, not easy. These are not easy conversations. But we certainly in our Western culture, we just don't talk about it. You know, death is this awful thing. And in so many other cultures, death is just there. It's such a part of life. As Dr. King says, we're human. That's part of our human experience. So I hope that you found something interesting in this conversation and maybe even a shift in how you do things or the conversations you have with those people around you. I certainly found it interesting. Remember that you can find the podcasts on the Chai FM website. Just go there and you'll find all of our shows there. Just again, you know, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to make a contribution or give us any feedback, please send a SMS to 34519 or Telegram 0618951019. Always a privilege to be in your company. Loved it. And I look so forward to being with you next week. For me, Nikki Seberini. Until next time, take care and goodbye.